Live from New York, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Gary Parrish on CBS Sports Radio.
I am Gary Parrish, columnist, a television analyst for CBS Sports, in for Rome, and I'm coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Kurt Heelan's going to join me in the next segment, NBC Sports, talk NBA with him. And one of the things I'll ask him about is Russell Westbrook's incredible performance last night. 20 points, 21 assists, 20 rebounds on a stage that only, maybe not only, but a stage that the Lakers provide. Because anytime, even this version of the Lakers, anytime they're involved in a game, it's a bigger deal than it otherwise would be. And Russell Westbrook goes out, gets 20 points, 21 assists, 20 rebounds. It's only the second time an NBA player has ever gone 20, 20, and 20 in a game. And afterward, he dedicated the performance to Nipsey Hussle, who, of course, is his friend, the hip-hop artist and activist who was murdered over the weekend in South L.A. 855-212-4227 is the number here. 855-212-4CBS. If you want to talk to me about Russell Westbrook's performance last night, you can reach me there, 855-212-4CBS. And it really was, I think, one of the all-time great performances, because let's just start here. When you do something in a league that's only been done one previous time and zero times in modern history, it automatically goes down as one of the great all-time performances. Again, 20 points, 21 assists, 20 rebounds. And when you set out to do that, like, it'd be amazing if you just did it anytime, anywhere, whatever. But when you set out to do that for very specific reasons and then accomplish it, it really does, like, resonate in a different way. Tom, where does that rank in terms of performances this year? It's got to be, it's not at the top, it's near the top, right?
I struggle with the narrative for Russell Westbrook. Last night for me was at the top of this season. I just look, as we discussed before the show, Gary, he has a mindset of, okay, I want to go get 20, 20, and 20 tonight.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely incredible that he could just turn it on and say, I'm going to go do this tonight. They need me to get 40 points tonight. I'm athletic enough. I have the mindset. I'm going to go get 40 points and try to get us a W. To be able to do 20-20-20, that's the part that blows my mind. Not actually what he had to do to get it. Mm-hmm. Just saying, that's what I want to do, and then he goes and does it.
No, totally incredible. And, you know, he does it in a win, so it doesn't come at the expense of anything. And a win that Oklahoma City needed, by the way, because they have not been playing well lately. And then, I don't know if you saw pregame, but they asked him about Nipsey Hussle. And he said, I don't want to talk about it. And then he showed up at the arena later in a Crenshaw shirt to pay tribute to him. And then he goes out and, by design, tries to get 20, 20, and 20. And afterward, on national television, when he was asked about it, he didn't say 20, 20, 20. He said 20 plus 20 plus 20. People know what that means. And I'm sure there were a lot of people watching who have no idea what that means. And I don't want to try to pretend to be a middle-aged guy from the suburbs who is well-versed in gang affiliations. But Nipsey Hussle was affiliated, at least at one time, with the Roland 60s gang, which is connected to the Crips in L.A. And so that's what that was. 20 plus 20 plus 20 equals 60. And then Baron Davis, who's also from California, had interesting thoughts on television last night about this, because though we have lost hip-hop stars to violence before, this one seems to be resonating in a different way, because this guy is somebody who was actually trying to do good in his community. You know, and not everybody who makes it in that industry decides that they want to be anything other than just great in that industry, but he did. You know, this wasn't just somebody who never forgot where he came from. Like, he's still, like, kicking it where he came from, trying to make a difference where he came from, you know, opening businesses where he came from. He died where he came from. He, we subsequently find out, had a meeting scheduled on Monday with the LAPD to try to have an open dialogue about how to curb gang violence and gun violence in that community. And then tragically and sadly, he ends up dying of gun violence in the streets in that community. And that's why I think it's resonated so much, especially with basketball players who are from those same areas. DeMar DeRozan, Russell Westbrook, because they knew him not only as an incredible artist, an accomplished artist, but as somebody who was had maybe been on the wrong path at one point and still dabbled in that world, but somebody who was actually trying to make a positive impact and bring whatever change he could possibly bring. Instead, he ends up dead at the age of 33, the way so many other people die in similar communities. And so Russell Westbrook decides last night, I'm going to go try to get 20 plus 20 plus 20, and then actually does it. And what it reminded me of is when Chris Paul was in high school, as the story goes, his grandfather was murdered at the age of 61. And then Chris Paul decided in advance of a basketball game that to pay tribute to his grandfather, he wanted to go try to get 61 points in a game. Like, imagine that even being your mindset. I'm going to go try to get 61. But obviously, he's Chris Paul and future Hall of Famer and projected, at least in some ways, that way when he was in high school. And so he goes out and I think got 24 points in the first quarter, but then gets to a point in the fourth where he's got 59. And I went back and watched the video of it earlier today. He's got 59, gets to the basket, gets fouled, makes it at 61, and lies on the ground because he got knocked down, and lies there as if he were hurt, but he wasn't hurt. He was crying because it was like, I want to pay tribute to my grandfather who I just lost to gun violence. He was 61 when he died. I'm going to get 61 points. So that 59 plus 2 gets him to 61, and then he steps to the free throw line and just shoots the ball at the bottom of the net, walks off the court, collapses in his father's arms. I mean, it was a high school basketball story, but still a story that got a lot of attention even before Chris Paul was Chris Paul. That made national headlines. Even before we knew he was going to be what he's become, which, again, future Hall of Famer, that story resonated with people. And Russell Westbrook did his own version of that last night by setting out to go get 20 plus 20 plus 20, and it ends up being the second only 20-20-20 game in NBA history, and the first one in modern history. And so Russell Westbrook is also about to, by the way, become only the second player ever to average a triple-double in three consecutive years. And he's not really in the MVP conversation, even though this was wild. Like 3 years ago when he got a triple-double for the first time, it was like, well, if you average a triple-double, you're automatically the MVP. But now he's normalized that. So, like, I don't understand how – I mean, I do understand because Giannis is terrific. James Harden is also historic. But if it was automatic, you average a triple-double for a playoff team, you're going to be the MVP, you know, a few years ago. I don't know how you don't get in the conversation now when you're doing it for a third consecutive year. But either way, just an incredible performance under sad but fascinating circumstances last night. And, you know, a way to pay tribute and bring more attention to what happened to this his friend, but also Grammy-nominated artist over the weekend, because I've seen a lot of stuff on Facebook, you know, from, I don't know, different demographics where they weren't familiar with Nipsey Hussle until this became a mainstream story on Sunday afternoon / Sunday night. But I would encourage people to read about him because I've done a lot of reading over the past few days, and when you dive into that stuff, you'll figure out why he meant so much to so many people, and why, whether it's Baron Davis or DeMar DeRozan, or most recently and on the biggest stage, Russell Westbrook last night, you'll have a better grasp for why these athletes in the sports that we watch every day are really hurt by this and trying their best to make sure the memory of this person who was much more than a hip-hop artist lasts longer than his life did. Kurt Heelan's going to join me in the next segment, talk NBA with him. And I will ask him about Russell Westbrook's incredible performance. Sam Vecenie later on this hour from The Athletic. You listen to The Jim Rome Show. I'm Gary Parrish, filling in for Rome.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show. Gary Parrish on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, I'm Gary Parrish, television analyst and columnist at CBS Sports. I'm in for Rome. Sam Vecenie from The Athletic going to join me in the next segment. By the way, Philly's picking up right where they left off, up 2-0 on the Nationals. Already, Bryce Harper walked in his first at-bat and did score a run. Like I said, Sam Vecenie from The Athletic going to join me in the next segment, talk NBA draft and Final Four with him. But right now, Kurt Helin covers the NBA for NBC Sports. He's on Twitter at Basketball Talk. Kurt, it's Gary Parrish. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. And by the way, Sam's great at this. He's one of the best reads. So yeah, it's a good guy to have on, man.
No, he's terrific. You know, he initially started working for me at CBS Sports. I'll tell a quick story because I'm super proud of him. We had an opening, and I thought I knew somebody who made sense for that opening. And when my bosses asked for any recommendations, I said, hey, I think this person would make sense. And they said, hey, we like that person too. But do you ever heard of Sam Vecenie? I said, I don't know who Sam Vecenie is. Should I know? And they said, maybe. And they said, listen, just call him. I want you to talk to him, not interview him, but just have a conversation with him and just let me know what you think. I said, sure. So Sam and I spent, I don't know if it was 30 minutes or an hour on the phone. And the second I hung up, I said, listen, I still like the guy I was talking about, but this might be the guy you want to hire because he's super sharp and his career has flourished ever since then. So I'm looking forward to talking to him. But I'm looking forward to talking to you too. And this is where I want to start. Warriors last night beat the Nuggets. DeMarcus Cousins was awesome, and yet still Kevin Durant gets kicked out. Everybody's mad. Why are the Warriors so mad all the time?
It does seem that way. I think they're just I think the spotlight is on them so much that stuff gets blown up about them, and they don't, I don't know, there's chafing within the team a little bit. There's just they've been together too long and made all these runs, and I think it's just, I don't know, does familiarity breed contempt sometimes? It's not like they dislike each other. It's not like they don't know how to win. But they just have kind of, they need something to shake this up and change the circumstances, which, by the way, I think they'll get this summer. But I think it's just that. I think Kevin Durant's can be kind of a moody guy, and he's tired of being asked about this, you know, the pressure of this summer hanging on them. And they all realize that this is probably the last run with this group, and there's a little bit of extra pressure on them because of that.
Right. I live in Memphis, and the Warriors closed the regular season against the Grizzlies at FedEx Forum this season. And it's possible that by then they might just rest everybody because they'll have whatever they can lock up, locked up. But the point I'd made, and this isn't unique to me, I think you've just said it, probably the last opportunity you're going to have to watch Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, and Klay Thompson play together on the Golden State Warriors. The consensus seems to be that's coming to an end after this season, right?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, nothing is for sure. Kevin Durant is not the most decisive person ever, and he might, you know, they might win another title and he might sit there during another parade. And I think if he re-signed with the Warriors, it would still be a 1+1 to spend 1 year in the new building at Chase Center, which you know, the building they've got in San Francisco, which is like literally, I think, like 2 blocks from where he lives in the city. That said, the general sense around the league is he's gone. He wants to carve his own legacy somewhere else and have his own team and expand his kind of, you know, Hall of Fame career and legacy that way, rather than being in the culture that's clearly, look, this is Steph Curry's culture, this is Steph Curry's team, and I think he just wants his own space.
Is it going to be in New York? There's a lot of speculation of that. Yeah. All my friends here in New York ask me about it every time because they think I know what Kevin Durant's going to do. They're excited about the possibility. Is it a realistic possibility?
First off, I don't think Kevin Durant knows what Kevin Durant's going to do. He's kind of tried to play this down this year. That said, yes, it's a genuine possibility. I would put Knicks 1, Clippers 2 on the potential he leaves, you know, and go somewhere else list. I don't think it's going to be there.
I don't think so either.
No, if he goes, it's a place where he believes he can win quickly because really carve out his own legacy. And I think that those are actually two teams and two markets where you can do that.
I'm talking to Kurt Helin here from NBC Sports. He's on Twitter at Basketball Talk. I want to go off the court for just a second, the Kristaps Porzingis situation. Adrian Wojnarowski reported a lot of details between the interactions between Porzingis and his accuser, and I thought it was especially interesting that Michelle Roberts, who, of course, is in charge of the NBA Players Association, said, we've looked into this, we've examined the evidence at this moment based on what we know. We stand with Kristaps. You know, Kristaps, you know as well as I that certainly these days. About the safest thing you can do is side with the accuser or stay out of it. The idea that Michelle Roberts was willing to say, we stand with the accused, suggests that, at least at this point, the people in the NBA don't think this is going where maybe the accuser wants it to go.
It's very possible. There are people within the NYPD, I've been told, that do kind of believe her and believe, you know, the situation. That said, I mean, just as somebody who, you know, before they covered, like I spent 10 years on a cop beat doing quote unquote real journalism before I was doing sports. Sexual assault crimes in general are both hard to prove and rarely clean, in the sense that like it tends to be sticky, messy situations, and this certainly reads as one of those where there's a lot more complexity to it than necessarily what did or didn't happen in that room, and I'm not going to speculate as to what did or didn't happen, but it's I think that it makes sense for the league to back its players. I don't think that the players' union to back its players. Mm-hmm. I don't think, even though Michelle Roberts is a woman, I think in this kind of murky situation she loses a lot more cachet with the union and her the people she represents if she doesn't back him.
That makes sense. I'm talking to Kurt Heelan here from NBC Sports. He's on Twitter at Basketball Talk. The Wizards GM job is now open. How attractive of a job is that?
And
that's a good answer.
Yeah, there's only 30 of them.
Right.
So yes, it's attractive. It's the kind of job that one of those guys in line for a job who's been waiting, you know. Rojas in Houston, or I don't think you're going to get Zarin out of Weaver in Oklahoma City. Zarin's probably not leaving Boston. But that said, like I said, there's 30 of them. Somebody will want that job and do it. It's just, that is a really, really tough situation, starting with the fact John Wall, Supermax, he's got 4 years, $171 million kicking in next season, which he's going to miss most of because of his torn Achilles. You start with this anchor of a contract. You're probably going to have to max out Beal to keep him this summer, and that might be a super max too, because if he makes all NBA, he qualifies. You've got Mahimi still on that roster. It's a mess of a roster that's going to take years to fix properly. And all that time, by the way, you got to manage Ted Leonsis. So have fun with that. And his expectations. When you look at somebody like David Griffin who might have choices, I'm not sure that's the job he jumps at.
I'm talking to Kurt Heelan from NBC Sports on Twitter at Basketball Talk. I want to take you back on the court, specifically to last night, what happened in Oklahoma City. Russell Westbrook, it appears deliberately, went out and tried to get a 20 plus 20 plus 20, the second only 20-20-20 game in terms of points, assists, and rebounds in NBA history, dedicated it to his friend and hip-hop star Nipsey Hussle, who was murdered this past weekend. In terms of individual performances we've seen this year and maybe in modern history, where does a 20-20-20 from Russell Westbrook rank?
Well, I mean, the last guy to do it was Wilt Chamberlain at, I think, 68. And anytime you're, you know, we've had this a few times, because Harden was doing it earlier this year. Anytime you're mentioned in a sentence with record book and Wilt Chamberlain, like, you're in a lead company. Like, that guy's numbers are just absolutely stupid, ridiculous. So it is a very impressive feat. By the way, he absolutely was hunting that at the end. He refused to come out. He was going after the rebounds. They were letting him get it. And at that point, I don't really blame him. I don't really have a problem with him going at the end of the game. They needed that win. They are desperately trying to stay out of that 8 seed. They do not want the Warriors in the first round for obvious reasons. And they needed that win to make sure they got it. They did. That's a huge step. And if it takes that kind of performance from Westbrook to get it, he's got to come up with a couple more of them, because they have a tougher schedule than the Spurs the rest of the way.
They did win last night, Oklahoma City, but they've been sliding lately.
Oh, yeah.
Is Billy Donovan safe there?
No, not at all. Look, Paul George has stumbled since the second half of the year. Russell Westbrook's shooting has been off all season. He was 8 of 23 last night. I mean, he put up numbers, but he was 8 of 23. The role players aren't fitting well. If they're the 7 or 8 seed and get bounced in the first round, which is more likely than not, somebody's got to pay a price, and it's probably going to be Billy Donovan.
That's interesting, because I obviously have college people ask me all the time, is he ready to – there was some thought, and it doesn't appear to be true, but that's some thought that maybe UCLA would wait it out and see if Billy Donovan became available, but it doesn't look like it's going to go that way. But obviously, if he's no longer in Oklahoma City, people are going to wonder if he's ready to come back to college basketball as a two-time national championship winner. I'm talking to Kurt Heelan here from NBC Sports. Can't talk about the NBA without talking about LeBron, even when he is shut down for the season. We're about to have an NBA playoffs without LeBron James for the first time in a long time. From the NBA's perspective, in a television perspective, how big of a deal is that?
I think we'll see, but it hurts. I mean, LeBron is an established star. I mean, say what you will about, you know, everybody was a little bit weary of the Cleveland Golden State Finals in terms of just not again. Man, look, when you're trying to bring in casual fans, the fans, you know, the fans who are not going to probably watch those games anyway, the fans, you need stars. The NBA is star-driven. Obviously, Steph Curry and Kevin Durant qualify. Having LeBron on the other side of that ledger, even when that's, you know, last year that Cavaliers team had no business being there, really helped draw. So it is going to be an interesting hit, even though there's great storylines. Like, I think from the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs on, with Boston, Philadelphia, Toronto, and everyone, like, that, any of those teams could come out. Milwaukee can come out. Any of them. It's, as a basketball fan, it's fascinating. But in terms of just pure marketing, it's not LeBron.
Right.
And Giannis isn't LeBron yet. Like, they have some good big – Joel Embiid's great. He's not LeBron yet. And, I, you know, they're going to miss that come the finals.
Last thing before I let you go, wrapping up here with Kurt Heelan from NBC Sports. Is there an obvious path to getting LeBron James back to a world championship contender in L.A.? It obviously did not go well in year one. And I know the thought has always been that they'll surround him with other stars, but it doesn't look like too many other stars are anxious to be there.
They've got to get somebody. Look, they took on all those horrible one-year contracts. Your Rondos, your Michael Beasley didn't even finish the year. He finished it in China. Mm. You know, JaVale McGee. They took on all these contracts so they could go get somebody this summer. They've either got to find a way with whoever ends up being the new Pelicans GM to get back in the Anthony Davis conversation, or, and that's a long shot because you've got to convince owners above that. The Pelicans don't want to deal with the Lakers at a very high level. Or they've got to land somebody, and they're not going to get Durant, and they're not going to get Kawhi Leonard, I've heard from sources, and Klay Thompson isn't leaving. So is Kemba Walker big enough? Right. Is he even leaving? What about Jimmy Butler? I don't know if that's enough. I don't think it's a very easy path. I don't think it's as simple as Magic Johnson thought this was going to be.
It certainly doesn't appear to be. That's Kurt Heelan from NBC Sports. Make sure you're reading him there. Follow him on Twitter at Basketball Talk. Kurt, terrific as always. I really appreciate it, man.
Take care, Gary. Talk to you soon. And by the way, some of us still have Virginia alive in our tournament. Some of us had them winning it all.
It's not me. My Sweet 16 was awesome. My Final Four fell apart pretty quickly.
I got one. I'm just hanging my hat on Virginia.
Well, yeah, hey, that's the one to be with. That's the favorite. Hey, Kurt, thanks so much.
Take care, man.
All right. That's Kurt Heelan from NBC Sports. Again, he's on Twitter at Basketball Talk. I'm Gary Parrish in for Jim Rome. You're listening to CBS Sports Radio. Sam Vecenie from The Athletic going to join me in the next segment. I believe he just landed in Minneapolis. We'll talk Final Four with him, NBA draft prospects with him. But first, here's the latest sports update from Rich Ackerman.
Live from New York, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Gary Parrish on CBS Sports Radio.
I am Gary Parrish, columnist, a television analyst for CBS Sports. You're listening to CBS Sports Radio. You're watching us on CBS Sports Network. Buzz Williams is leaving Virginia Tech for Texas A&M. I'll tell you about Buzz's interesting approach to his career in the next segment, right around 2 Eastern. But right now I'm joined by Sam Vecenie from The Athletic, who just landed in Minneapolis for the Final Four. I'm assuming that you're talking to me right now. You had a safe and wonderful flight.
Well, you know, I'm actually about to board the flight. I'm out in LAX, and you know what? I'm looking at a duty-free store. I got a nice bottle of New Amsterdam vodka in front of me. I know that you're a fan, so I just had to tell you.
It's so smooth, you can drink it straight. New Amsterdam vodka, pour your soul out. Okay, so I hope I didn't jinx your flight. That'd be horrible. I'd feel bad.
I think we're good.
You should be fine. You're almost always fine on a flight. Okay, you're headed to Minneapolis then. Sell me on this Final Four. We didn't get Duke. We didn't get Carolina. We didn't get Kentucky. Most importantly, we did not get Zion. You don't have to sell me, but for a casual sports fan, what should they be interested in?
Yeah, I think you should be interested in good defense if that's something that you're interested in. But if we're talking about excitement, I think we're going to get four really evenly matched teams, and I think we're going to get a lot of unpredictability, right? And unpredictability leads to a lot of really fun results, I think. So all four of these teams, I think, are very evenly matched talent-wise. I think they're very evenly matched in terms of just ability and what you're going to get on a night-in, night-out basis. So I'm excited. Like, this is the first Final Four in a while where I don't have a great feel on what I think is going to happen. Like, you could tell me any of these four teams won, and I wouldn't be totally surprised.
It is a surprising Final Four in the sense that almost nobody who projected a bracket had this way. But these four teams were all top 13 at KenPom before the NCAA tournament started. It's a Big Ten regular season champ and an ACC regular season champ and a SEC tournament champion and an ACC regular season champ. So, like, these are teams that had established themselves as some of the best teams in the country, even if they weren't the ones we placed at the top of the sport for the most part, right?
Yeah, for sure. They're genuinely great teams. I think that, you know, I said coming in that I thought all of Michigan State, Texas Tech, and Virginia are top 10 teams. And then Auburn, you know what? I've been a little bit lower on Auburn throughout the year. I just never thought they really figured it out until the end of the year. And you know what? They peaked at the right time. You know, this is a team that can beat anyone because they can step out and knock down outside shots. Whenever you have Bryce Brown and Jarrett Harper, mature guards that can really fill it up offensively, you've got a shot against anybody in the country. And I'm, you know, really looking forward to seeing that matchup of Jarrett Harper and Bryce Brown against guys like Ty Jerome, Kyle Guy, DeAndre Hunter, and seeing just where this all goes. These are four excellent teams, and they're four, like I said, very evenly matched teams.
Yeah, it's Texas Tech, the Big 12 regular season champion. It is Michigan State, Big Ten regular season and Big Ten tournament champion. Virginia, ACC regular season champion. And Auburn, SEC tournament champion on a significant winning streak headed into this Final Four. So they're all capable, which underlines your point. I'm talking to Sam Vecenie from The Athletic. Tom Izzo said yesterday, voluntarily, best I can tell, that he feels like he needs a second national championship to validate his career at Michigan State. Do you think Tom Izzo needs a second national championship to validate anything?
I don't. He's a Hall of Famer. He's rightfully a Hall of Famer. And, you know, I don't know why he would feel that way, to be honest. I mean, I'm sure he wants a second national championship. I'm sure that he feels like this season, which in my opinion is one of the greatest coaching jobs he's ever done in his career, would really validate that. But at the end of the day, I mean, Tom Izzo's been to what, 8 Final Fours, 7 Final Fours? He's won a national title. I mean, he's the only Big Ten coach seemingly in my lifetime that has won a national title. So I wouldn't fret if I was Tom. People are going to remember him. People are going to absolutely recognize him as one of the greatest coaches of this era, and realistically any era, I think. Maybe he's feeling that way a little bit because of the controversy that happened earlier in the tournament, and he feels like he needs to kind of break up the momentum in some way, but people are going to remember Tom Izzo as a great, regardless of what goes down here in Minneapolis.
I guess we're never surprised that Michigan State's on this stage because under Tom they've been on this stage so often, but it shouldn't go unnoticed that he lost 2 lottery picks, then lost a starter for the season, then lost Nick Ward for a significant portion of the season, and yet still won the Big Ten, still won the Big Ten tournament, and still made it to the Final Four. As you point out, that is a pretty incredible coaching job.
Yeah, Tom Izzo won the Big Ten, won the Big Ten tournament, and got to the Final Four with a team that I think you can legitimately say there's no guaranteed NBA player on this team. Like, if you made me guess, like, I would probably say Cassius Winston plays some games as a backup point guard in the NBA, but, like, I don't know that Cassius Winston's going to stick. I don't know that Aaron Henry is going to develop and become, you know, this awesome potential combo forward who is useful in the NBA. So the fact that he has this team here with 0 NBA players, it's totally remarkable to me. I think he has done an absolutely incredible job this year.
So Tony Bennett finally breaks through and gets to the Final Four, and you saw him celebrating on that ladder. He looked like a guy filled with joy, but also a little relieved that he never has to answer the question about, can Tony Bennett get to a Final Four? Can this style get to a Final Four? I'm curious what you think. Is he free now of criticism? Or if he doesn't win a national championship now, especially considering Virginia's the only one seed in Minneapolis, is the conversation just going to shift slightly to, okay, fine, he got to a Final Four, but he still never won a national championship. Where are we at with Tony Bennett?
Yeah, I think that that's just naturally where the conversation will skip because, you know, hot take, people like to complain right. and like to find faults in people. So, you know, I think that the fault, if he loses, you know, to say to Auburn, Auburn makes 15 threes and knocks them out, will be, hey, you know what, Tony Bennett, you know, he can't get it done in the Final Four. He can't. This style still can't win six games in March. It can win four, but it can't win six. And, you know, people complain about the style of play. At the end of the day, like, there's a reason that NBA teams have considered Tony Bennett in the past and have looked into him as a potential candidate to move up and make that leap to the NBA. It's because he's an unbelievable coach. Like, for me to sit here and complain about what Tony Bennett has done at Virginia and for people to complain about it is just totally crazy. There's a reason that this program has not been to the Final Four in 35 years. And it's because it's a hard job. And, you know, maybe the most impressive thing that you can say about Tony Bennett, he took Washington State to the Sweet 16. That program is the hardest. That's the hardest job in Power 5 basketball, and he took them to the Sweet 16. That is impossible to me.
I'm talking to Sam Vecenie from The Athletic. He is on his way to Minneapolis for the Final Four. I'm glad you said what you said about Tony Bennett in the NBA, because though his name had been connected to UCLA, I've long believed that his next job, and I do think he's got a next job, but his next job is going to be an NBA job. I think he'll get that opportunity, and I think he'll accept that opportunity someday.
I think that's very possible. I mean, I don't know what he wants to do. You know what I mean? I think that he's going to be successful at whatever it is he wants to do, and he's going to have the option to do whatever it is he wants to do. I mean, you probably know Tony better than I do. I've talked to him a few times. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say I'm an expert on him. But, you know, I think that he'll certainly have that chance to make that leap if he wants to. You know, maybe just like a couple of other coaches. And, you know, at the end of the day, you mentioned the UCLA job. I think that that is a big reason why Tony Bennett's candidacy for the UCLA job, no one really ever took it seriously because, A, he's got it rolling at Virginia, and, B, it just makes a lot of sense for him to stick around until he gets, you know, a potential leap up to the major leagues.
If UCLA does end up hiring Jamie Dixon, which is where the reports are at right now, obviously you live in L.A., you're familiar with that program. Is that a good hire for the school?
So, yeah, I mean, the day after Steve got fired, I said on my podcast that I thought that Jamie Dixon would probably be the guy that they landed on at the end of the day, just because I thought it made sense in terms of, you know, all they're going to strike out on the high-end guys, and then we're going to end up in a situation where they're searching, and, you know, Jamie Dixon obviously wants the job. He's from North Hollywood out here. It just made a lot of sense to me, and I think it's a fine hire. Like, Jamie Dixon's won 400 games at Pitt and at TCU. You look at the histories of Pitt basketball over the course of the last, like, two decades outside of what Ben Howland and Jamie Dixon have been able to do. It's not exactly strong. You look at what TCU's basketball history is, it's not exactly strong. Jamie Dixon's been coaching for like 15 years now and has one season under 20 wins. He is an unbelievable basketball coach. Like, look, I get it's not the sexiest hire. I get that, like, you know, the UCLA fan base isn't exactly going to be galvanized by this move, but he's a good coach, and I think that he'll win a lot of games at UCLA as long as he can find the right assistants to recruit.
Talking to Sam Vecenie from The Athletic. He's on Twitter at Sam_Vecenie. You can read him at The Athletic, and he's also the host of the Game Theory podcast. You can find that anywhere you find podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. UCLA reportedly offered John Calipari 6 years, $48 million. He has subsequently agreed to a lifetime contract at Kentucky. Whether one has anything to do with the other is debatable, but either way, did UCLA actually think it had a real shot with John Calipari?
It did. UCLA definitely thought it had a real chance, from what I was told. There was a genuine meeting. Yeah. Like, I don't know if it was Calipari, I don't know if it was his representatives, but, like, people sat down and talked. UCLA got together all that it needed to get together. Like, you know, one big problem out here in UCLA is that charter flights have been an issue, and John Calipari probably hasn't flown commercial in a decade since he got to Kentucky. So, you know, UCLA's alums got together, they got together the boosters, and they got together a situation where private plane usage would not be a problem for Calipari. But look, at the end of the day, they offered him, what, $1.5 million a year downgrade, and then including the fact that, like, I mean, what's the most expensive house in Lexington, like $15 million? you can walk down the street in L.A., and you can walk down the street from where I live even, which isn't exactly like the world's best place in Hollywood, And you can find a house for $7 million. You can find a house for $30 million with ease. Like, it's just, it's so much of a different vibe out here that, and so much different financially that I just never saw it as realistic in terms of what they were offering, getting John Calipari to ever commit to UCLA.
No, the offer was for $8 million per year. John makes like $9.2, $9.3 million per year. And I know that's with, you know, extra stuff connected to a salary. But either way, the idea that John Calipari would leave Kentucky for an inferior job, create a situation where...
At an Under Armour school, by the way.
First off, John Calipari ain't leaving Nike. All right, so let's start there. Especially not leaving for an inferior job in a market where the money just doesn't translate the same way. You make $8 or $9 million in Lexington. That's a lot different than making $8 or $9 million in LA. So it was always a weird story, but at least it seems to be put to bed now. John, lifetime contract at Kentucky. It's obviously a great thing for John. Is it a great thing for Kentucky?
Yeah. I mean, John Calipari is one of the five best coaches in college basketball. He will always keep you relevant because he understands how to keep programs relevant. He understands how to, just keep you in the news constantly, be it by his, gregarious personality, be it by recruiting kids that are among the best kids in every recruiting class. Like, he's just always going to keep you relevant, and I think it's totally valuable. And you look at his track record of success, he made 7 Elite Eights in 10 years. That's impossible to me. Like, in the modern era where kids spread out, it is so incredibly difficult to get to 7 Elite Eights in 10 years, and he's done it.
And this is a point I made yesterday, is that, and you pointed this out earlier, people like to complain about other people, like to point out what folks have not done.
Right.
So John Calipari's only won one national championship in these 10 years at Kentucky. Well, in that same span, only Jay Wright and Mike Krzyzewski have won more. And
right.
John's been to more Final Fours than anybody else, been to more Elite Eights than anybody else. The point I made is that people tend to judge John Calipari, and I really do think this club is exclusive to John Calipari. They judge him based on what they think he ought to be rather than how he actually is relative to literally every other coach in college basketball. Because when you judge him next to every other coach in college basketball, he ranks, if not right at the top, then certainly in the top two or three.
Okay, I mean, here is just a hot take based on facts, right? Mike Krzyzewski has won 2 ACC titles and been to 2 Final Fours in 15 years. I would take John Calipari's resume over the course of those 15 years when you combine Memphis with Kentucky over what Mike Krzyzewski has done. And when we're talking about a guy that has exceeded what Mike Krzyzewski has done, I mean, what are we talking about here? Like, to quote you, what are we talking about?
No, it's wild. Like, I get it. You know, I guess it'd be, in an ideal world, John Calipari would have more than one national championship, but only 15 guys ever have more than one national championship. It's not an easy thing to do. Talking to Sam Vecenie from The Athletic, you mentioned earlier you're not sure Michigan State has an NBA player, even though Michigan State's in the Final Four. How many first-round draft picks do we have at the Final Four? We had a scenario where we were going to have Zion, Cam Reddish, R.J. Barrett, DeAndre Hunter, Brandon Clark, Rui Hachimura, Nasir Little, Kobe White. Now, best I can tell, we got DeAndre Hunter, Jarrett Culver, maybe Ty Jerome. Is there anybody I'm missing?
Yeah, I think it's about it, to be honest. I think that's what you're looking at. Like, maybe a couple years down the road, you're talking about Aaron Henry. Maybe a couple years down the road, you're talking about, one or two of these, like, younger, Texas Tech players. Like, Kayvon Moore won't play in the won't play in the Final Four. Chuma Okeke was an interesting one. Okeke is 6'8" forward, but he obviously tore his ACL in the Elite Eight or Sweet 16. I can't remember.
Sweet 16, right.
And, now he's out. So, yeah, I think you're looking at two guaranteed first-round picks, two guys that I think are probably going to be lottery picks in DeAndre Hunter and Jarrett Culver. And, I think it's hard to say that there are going to be any other surefire ones.
Yeah, it's not the Final Four we could have had, but we'll have fun with it anyway. Sam Vecenie, thanks for being here. Have a safe flight. I'll see you in Minneapolis.
Yep, see you in a few hours.
All right, brother. Sam Vecenie from The Athletic on Twitter, @Sam_Vecenie. And again, his podcast is the Game Theory Podcast. You can find it anywhere you find podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. Buzz Williams has left Virginia Tech for Texas A&M. And Virginia Tech, by the way, I give him credit, They've handled this tremendously. Sometimes you feel burned when your coach leaves you for, yes, a better, but a somewhat comparable job. Whip Babcock, everybody at that school seems to be handling it well. It's an interesting approach Buzz has taken to his coaching career. I'm going to tell you about that next. I'm Gary Parrish in for Rome. You're listening to CBS Sports Radio.